Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas radio show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Yay. So, gosh, there's so much going on out there and so much to talk about. And
always something.
Right. And what comes to mind immediately is, I guess, because we've been looking at it, is all this stuff that's going on in Flint, Michigan with lead contaminated water.
Yes. Flint's water supply was switched from Detroit to Flint River water, and Flint River water is corrosive.
Wow.
So that is causing lead to leach from
the pipes.
And then that gets into drinking water.
Yeah, that is so...
Well, it's not just drinking water. It's just water that people are also using to bathe and cook and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right. Very not okay. But it's really opening up sort of this can of worms. And I saw a map recently showing where other lead, you know, levels are around the country. And, you know, our friend Tamara Rubin did a film about this. So this is her time, man. She's out in Flint now showing her film, Lead Safe America. And it's great. It's good for people to wake up is what it is, you know. A bummer.
Right. Well, and her film is called Misled.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, her organization is Lead Safe America.
Correct. Yeah.
And that's her nonprofit. And then the film is called Misled.
There you go. Thank you.
Definitely something to see, because I think so many people, including myself, before I got connected with Tamara, you don't think that lead is an issue.
Right. It seems like...
And it is still an issue today, which is just kind of crazy.
Right. And so I'm grateful for her work and sorry for the people in Flint.
Yeah, it's very sad.
Because, you know, it's a huge bummer, but hopefully, you know, they will get some resolution and the rest of us will wake up.
Yes.
Wake up!
And get
wake
your water
up.
Tested.
Get your water tested, people. So other than that, we have kind of a fun show and an interesting show. I had a chance to go into New York to the Many Shades of Green studio and sit with Maxine Rubin, who they aired my interview. She interviewed me, and they aired that a couple of weeks ago, and I had the chance to interview her. So we really had a lot to talk about, and it was interesting, you know, interviewing the interviewer. You know what I mean.
Were you looking in a mirror when you did that, too?
Right, exactly. It
would, like, go on for infinity.
It gets kind of twisted, right? But, you know, she's a spitfire and very active in, you know, in her community, but also in green media. And obviously we like her show, which is aired on GDGD radio every week.
Yes, it is.
Yay. Also got to talk to Brigitte Myers, who we haven't talked to in a little while.
I had asked her specifically to talk about treating dry skin from the inside out, because a lot of people just throw lotion on. It's more about just what you're putting on your skin, it's what you're putting into your body.
Well, she had some interesting things to say, one of which I had never heard before, having to do with how our...
People have to stay tuned for that. Don't give it away.
Well, I'm just going to say that I never knew that our bodies, as we age, you know, the level of water in our body diminishes. I was like, what? Wait, say what?
And so our skin starts sagging.
Like, that's just not right. So, but anyway, she talks about, you know, like the statistics on that and a lot of really good recommendations for how to keep our skin.
I am going to be listening to that with both ears.
I knew when that topic came up. I'm like, oh yeah, Lynn needs this one. That's all right. I got her to talk about some other things, which you will hear in the coming weeks. Also got a chance to talk to this really cool young fellow, Aaron Kirby from I Matter Youth. About a program they're doing, a campaign called Climate Report Card, which is all about in the city you live in or the town you live in, you do an assessment of how is your city doing And he,
oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and he happens to be in Portland, Oregon, where...
Well, I'm guessing they have a good report card.
Well, I think it's a little surprising, you know, not perfect, but he's an interesting young man, and I had a good time speaking with him, and I'm curious to learn more, and I kind of want to do this climate report card in my town. I don't know if it's big enough. Like, do you have to be a city? I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I would be interested as well.
Right?
Do the whole 60010 zip code.
Exactly. So, oh, and we haven't had a wildlife segment in a while. Green Divas do.
Right, we haven't.
We heart wildlife. We love wildlife, but...
Yeah,
so I had a chance. I was thinking kittens.
Yeah.
Kittens and dogs.
I love wildlife.
Videos. No.
Weird voice.
So I got a chance to speak again to Lori Ann Bird, who is the, she's from the
Center. It's very ironic that her last name is Bird.
Isn't it, though? I always thought so, but I didn't mention it this time. she's with the Center for Biological Diversity, and she works with their environmental health program. She's the director of it, but she's also an attorney, and...
Uh-huh.
So she understands a lot of the deeper scientific and legal implications.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm getting at is she's talking to us about a recent EPA report, which was an assessment of the effect on pesticides on pollinators. So, like, you know, on the scheme of things, like, yay, the FDA is looking into, the EPA, excuse me, did I say FDA? I meant EPA. They're very similar in my mind, you know. The EPA, yay, they're looking at this issue, but apparently it's a very, very flawed report for a couple of potential reasons, but she helps us understand why it's not enough. They need to dig a little deeper on this, so... Yay.
Great. Is there an action item on there, too?
Well, the main action item was...
Anything we can do?
Please don't use Roundup and other known neonicotinoids and pesticides.
I love that word.
I know. I'm like, did I say that right? Neonicotinoids?
neonics.
Neonics.
Short.
Yeah, that help... I mean, that have a terrible effect on pollinators. And pollinators are more than bees. They include bats and butterflies and all kinds of other little critters that we need.
Yes, we do need those.
So what else? I think we were going to ask people to do some stuff for us. How about that?
Yeah, well, iHeartRadio, we're on iHeartRadio on demand. If you just do a search on Green Divas iHeart,
yes,
you'll find the link. That's a place to listen to our show, among other places, but we could really use some reviews there.
Yeah.
And some thumbs up.
Yes. Yeah,
there's an opportunity to click on a thumb up. Hopefully you're going to click on the up thumb for each episode.
Yeah.
So well, that's something.
Yeah, we'd appreciate that. And of course, you can find us on other platforms, but we're just highlighting one today for you.
And share us up to your network if you have, you know, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, wherever you are.
Yeah, follow
share
us.
Share our show. Share. You need to spread the word.
Share the show. Share the fun. Share the joy. Also, I just want to throw in a little, a little word for GDGD Radio, which is the network that runs and streams 24/7 with shows like The Green Divas. Including The Green Divas, I should say, and other shows like The Many Shades of Green, Mrs. Green's World, Mighty House,
Earth Matters.
Yeah, there's all kinds of great shows other than ours, although ours is great. But you can get an app for that. It's free. It's easy. I tune in almost every day, just random times, check, see what's happening, right?
Right.
So in the meantime... You got a lot of cool stuff coming towards you on this show, so please stay tuned, relax, and enjoy.
Be green.
The term global warming was first used 35 years ago. One lone scientist could see the future. More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
In August 1975, geochemist Wally Broecker published his paper titled, Are We on the Brink of a Pronounced Global Warming? In this paper, Broecker correctly predicted that the present cooling trend will, within a decade or so, give way to a pronounced warming induced by carbon dioxide, and that by early in the next century, carbon dioxide will have driven the mean planetary temperature beyond the limits experienced during the last 1,000 years. 10 years later, in 1985, ice cores drilled in the Antarctic confirmed Broecker's theory. And now, 35 years later, we're on the brink of unprecedented change. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Vibrant health and beauty radiates from the inside out. Get your glow on with Green Diva's health and beauty tips, from natural skincare to creating healthier habits that make us sparkle. Yay! And back again with our fabulous Brigitte Mars, Green Diva Brigitte, our Green Diva herbalist, our go-to herbalist. She's also an author of many books, but most recently, The Home Reference to Holistic Health and Healing. And hi, Brigitte.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on your show, and I'm delighted.
Yeah. Well, and it's this time of year, while we're talking, it happens to be winter, and you're in Boulder. I'm here in New Jersey, so we're in the colder climates. Tell us a little bit about how we can keep our skin healthy and, you know, deal with dry skin in the winter.
Well, dry skin is very common, and in some climates more than others. So here in Colorado, people, almost everybody has dry skin, dry scalp, dry eyes. So if you live in a moister climate, that's going to help a little bit. And as we get older, our bodies contain less water. It kind of goes down from like 70% to about 60%.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I never knew that.
And when the air is dry, so if it hasn't rained in a long time, that's going to dry us out. And when it's cold outside and we have the heat on in our homes, it's almost like being in a dehydrator. So I'm a big believer in, you know, lots of blankets at night, but turn the heat down at night.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going to be warm under the blankets. You really don't need all of that. And it saves energy and saves our planet resources. So, you know, one of the best places to start with dry skin is just drink more water.
Right.
And, you know, drink from, you know, hydrate ourselves from the inside out, and, you know, drink good quality water.
Yes.
And know that some of the things that we drink, caffeine, alcohol, and smoke, like tobacco, are dehydrating to the skin.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of the products that we cleanse our skin with might be based on alcohol or have harsh detergents in them, things that lather a lot. That's going to dry us out more, too.
Yeah.
So besides drinking a lot, we know that we want to eat foods that are going to nourish us from the inside. So I think of all the beta-carotene-rich foods, things like winter squash and sweet potatoes, avocados with their wonderful oils, pumpkin and sunflower seeds, and then lots of green leafy vegetables, apricots, carrots. So eat more of those foods. And, of course, we need good quality oils. So start making your own salad dressing with extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah.
Make friends with coconut oil. It's wonderful as a condiment. It's my choice of using if I am going to cook something. I do eat a lot of raw food, but if I am going to cook something, I might use coconut oil as the base for whatever I'm going to saute onions in.
Yep.
And there's a lot of people, especially when they move to Colorado, who start taking fish oils as a supplement. But I also have a lot of people who don't want to eat fish, or they're concerned about mercury. So
yeah.
Chia seeds are a wonderful source of omega-3s. And we've also learned that sea buckthorn oil, which is actually an omega-7, is one of the best oils for helping to moisturize our skin. So you might check that out of
I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, sea buckthorn. It's actually something that you can grow in your yard. And I think it grows in Russia and survives a harsh climate.
Oh,
but,
so it might survive, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. So the best time to apply a moisturizer is when your skin's still a little damp. So don't towel off. I've often heard that the leading cause of dry skin are towels. About that for a minute. So I actually use a towel to dry off my hair, but then I tend to just put my clothes on, my nightie or something, at the end of the day, and let my skin dry on its own, but maybe apply a moisturizer while my skin is still a little damp.
Okay.
And so we certainly do not want to use moisturizers that are based on petroleum products, which is actually like a byproduct of the oil industry. It would be much better to use things that are made with vegetable oils. And, simply coconut oil is great, but there are a lot of wonderful natural products out there. Again, start looking for your moisturizers at the health food store. And maybe you don't need one with so many fragrances. I know that methyl and propylparaben has been removed from most of the natural moisturizers. But, shopping for a moisturizer, it's an opportunity to put your money where your mouth is and say, I want to support this company because they're using organic aloe vera, or they're using organic coconut oil, or they're supporting the rainforest in, South America. So read the ingredients and see what this company is about, and then you can feel really good about using it, and maybe having a moisturizer in a few different places so you're not just, it's at home, I have to wait till I get home. Maybe you need something that you can throw in your bag and use it during the day.
Yeah, I do, and because I get people sending me a lot of products to test, and I'm very, very sensitive, so I really only take ones that are pretty pure. So I have one in the studio. I have one down by my desk. Have one upstairs, but
perfect.
But I do, like, I keep it pretty simple. I use I think right now I'm using argan oil on my face.
Yes, that is one of the great new products, argan oil.
I've been incorporating all those oils you spoke of. I've been incorporating them for a while, so I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I'm on track.
Oh, super! And if you wanted to, improve your skin even a little bit more, there's some herbs that contain wonderful moisturizing ingredients. And I think of herbs like marshmallow root, violet leaves, fennel seed, plantain leaf. So these are things you can find at the health food store.
Well, plantain leaves in my backyard, I think.
Yes, and it's an amazing survival plant.
Yeah, it's, again, another one that might survive New Jersey and possibly me. Well, thank you so much. This is great, and I know you'll send us a post to put on the Green Divas, but I want to encourage people to go to BrigitteMars.com and find out some of the other, the books and the other remedies and recipes and tips that you have, and that's Brigitte, BrigitteE, MarsLikeThePlanet.com. Thank you so much, Brigitte. Talk to you soon, I hope.
My pleasure and honor. Thank you.
Are you sparkling yet? Well, you will be. For information on this segment and lots of other healthy, green living information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. Want to be encouraged about climate change and the future of our species? Then listen to the young Green Divas and Green Dudes from iMatter Youth, the voices of the next generation for climate action. Okay, our first I Matter Youth Report of 2016. We're going to be on today with Aaron Riffenberg Kirby. I don't know. I love that name, Riffenberg. I don't know why. It's like Riff. You know, he riffs. Riffenberg. He is one of the Speakers Bureau coordinators for iMatter. And hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm quite well. How are you?
I'm a little cold, but I'll get over it. You know, thanks for asking. So, you know, hey, climate change and all that. Now, where do you live? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, so I'm based in Portland right now.
Portland, Oregon?
Portland, Oregon.
I was just out there for the first time ever.
And it, you come visit me.
It rained. Yeah, if I'd have known, I definitely would have. I was out at the Green Fest. I was doing a panel out there. I don't know if you went to the Green Fest.
I did not.
Yeah, see, because like, it was not... A lot of Portland people didn't even know about it.
And it. Yeah, I just moved here, so I'm trying to figure stuff out.
Well, you will. It'll be there next year. It rained ridiculous. Like, even the Portland people said this is too much.
Oh, yeah. It's been quite a few weeks of nonstop rain.
Yeah.
Little El Nino's hitting us up here.
That's crazy. So how old are you, Aaron?
I'm currently 15.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm close to 16, though.
All right, getting active, getting out there already, man. You got me beat. I was definitely not saving the world at the age of 15. But anyway, so tell me a bit about how and why you got involved in iMatter.
Yeah, so when I was 12, I started an organization called Orb. And this organization was originally to start... trying to stop degradation of rainforest.
Oh, nice.
But very quickly it became a place for youth to take action on some local environmental issues. And I worked really hard on this organization, but really I didn't know enough about how to start an organization. I learned amazing amounts of stuff from the process.
Yeah.
And I spoke at countless public hearings all over the place. But I really was not able to maintain a body of youth large enough to form the body of an organization. And so it ended up being mostly me and this idea of an organization.
Right.
And so I found this organization called iMatter on the internet. And I'm like, wow, it seems like they have lots of youth. How did they do it? And so I got on the Ventura Yellow Pages, and I found Victoria, who was the executive director at the time. I found her phone number, called her up, and asked her, you know, how were you able to gather so many youth? And she basically responded by asking me to speak for them at a high school. And so I was desperate to try to find places to gather youth, be it in the high school, at a conference, wherever I could find youth and speak to them, try to get them to listen and try to get them to join.
Right.
I was desperate to get there. So I went and spoke at Ventura High School. It worked pretty well. For two organizations. And after that, I really started getting more and more involved with iMatter. And I realized that they were doing a very similar thing to what I was doing with Orb.
Right.
And that by continuing the life of Orb, which, you know, obviously wasn't working even at that point very well, I would be creating unnecessary competition.
Well, why reinvent the wheel, right?
Exactly. And so I decided to leave Orb and go work with iMatter. And, you know, that's been I have no regrets about that. It's been a great, wonderful experience for me.
Well, and here you are. So let's talk about one of the things that you've been working a bit on is this iMatter Climate Report Card, which is a way of youth in you know, cities all over the country, or I don't know, all over the world, reporting on what's going on in their cities. And you just did this process for Portland.
Right. So the report card is a really interesting piece of or organization of data. And it allows us to do two things. It allows us to create some competition between cities and to show them where they stand in comparison to other cities.
Yeah.
So, for example, a great example is Portland. I haven't actually told the city council this yet, but Portland got a C on the report card.
No, not Portlandia.
Portland got a C. And so, you know, that's kind of, it shows them where they stand. Like, in Portland, our your sense of there's sort of this claim to fame around environmental friendliness,
right.
And kind of pokes a hole in that. And to repair that, they have to go and make some better climate policies.
Great.
So that's an aspect, but also it allows us to pinpoint some good solutions. So the great example I like to use about an organization that didn't pinpoint these specific solutions is the Occupy movement.
Right.
So the Occupy movement was really cool. It was hugely popular. I thought it was very inspiring. But, you know, there was no specific solution that they stated.
Right.
And I think that was really the downfall of Occupy, because there was some great momentum, but there was no place to go towards.
Right. How do you capture that energy and momentum and make something happen with it?
Right, exactly. And so I think that's a really good benefit of the report card, that we have these pretty specific places where the city's doing badly or doing well, and we can make some specific policies, present them to the city council, and say, this is what you need to be doing better to get a better grade.
Right. And in theory, there may be someone, you know, within the I Matter Climate Report Card's cities that has a solution. They've already done this issue, whether it's community composting or whatever it is. They've implemented it, so one of these other cities can say, oh, okay, so here's a program we can possibly implement, you know.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, Aaron, I'm looking forward to talking to you again. I'm sure we'll speak again. And in the meantime, you know, thank you for getting out there and being so energized at a young age. And I'll look forward to hearing more from you soon.
Thank you.
I'm not sure about you, but I'm encouraged. Find out more about iMatter Youth and their ongoing iMatter Now campaign at imatteryouth.org. And of course, learn even more at thegreendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. You might not think that eliminating food waste would be an important part of the fight against climate change. But in fact, the two issues are closely connected.
If you measured food waste as a country, it would be the world's third largest emitter of greenhouse gases.
That's John Mandyke, who with Eric Schultz authored the book Food Foolish: The Hidden Connection Between Waste, Hunger, and Climate Change. In the book, the authors argue that in order to make a dent in the 3.3 billion metric tons of CO2 produced by food waste worldwide, we have to reduce that waste at every level. And in the United States, the scale is pretty staggering.
Imagine purchasing 3 bags of groceries. While driving home, toss half of 1 bag of food onto the road. That represents the loss that occurs during harvest, processing, and distribution. Arrive home and immediately toss the other half of the bag into the trash. That's the waste experienced by retailers and consumers.
But in spite of this, Mandyke is hopeful U.S. food waste and the resulting emissions can be cut in half within 15 years. He says educating consumers about the harmful effects of food waste and promoting better shopping habits will be key strategies. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
I'm Ed Begley, and you're listening to the Green Divas Radio Show, the entertaining source for low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green and take action for the Earth.
Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them. Well, Green Divas do heart wildlife. And I'm back with one of our go-to wildlife champions, Lori Ann Bird. She is the Environmental Health Director for the Center for Biological Diversity. And she's out there fighting the good fight and helping us learn and understand how we can help. So today I think we're talking a bit about the EPA's risk assessment for bee-killing pesticides and what's wrong with that. Hey, Lori Ann, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm okay. So I think we, what's up with the EPA here? What's going on?
Well, so last week the EPA put out a pollinator risk assessment for a pesticide called imidacloprid, which is one of the pesticides, neonicotinoid pesticides, that's become famous in recent years for being a leading cause of bee decline. So in that risk assessment, EPA took a look at how imidacloprid is affecting our pollinators.
Okay.
Interestingly, EPA called it a pollinator risk assessment, but it looked at exactly one pollinator, the honeybee, which, of course, is not a native pollinator, and is one of many, many species. You know, pollinators come in many forms. Pollinators,
bats are pollinators, right?
And bats. Bats are absolutely important pollinators that aren't looked at enough. And then there are about 4,300 species of native bees in North America that EPA also did not look at. So they just looked at the honeybee in this pollinator risk assessment. This is really problematic because even in the world of bees, we know that honeybees are much less sensitive to these bee-killing pesticides than our native bees. In fact, one study showed that native bees completely stopped reproducing when exposed to a level of neonicotinoid that didn't even affect honeybees. So much more sensitive.
Okay.
But imidacloprid is a uniquely potent systemic neurotoxin that, you know, it can directly kill a bee, but it also has very insidious subacute effects. For example, it will affect their homing instinct. They won't be able to find their way back to the hive. It will cause them to eat less, and so they're weak. It reduces their ability to successfully fight off predators. So all the things that you would imagine that a creature wouldn't be able to do well it has poisoning from a neurotoxin are happening. So EPA took a look, and a lot of people were really excited because they said, look, EPA has acknowledged that the stuff is harming bees. But you know, that acknowledgement was really... to me, it was not very exciting because there are actually thousands of studies that say that this is hurting bees. So this isn't like, you know,
groundbreaking.
It's not a live controversy.
Yeah. Right.
As much as the pesticide industry would like people to think that we don't have a good understanding about what's affecting our bees, we know that these pesticides are really causing severe harm to our pollinators and making them more susceptible to many other threats that they face.
Right.
For example, they, you know, have less forage, and so if they're already eating less because they've been exposed to a neurotoxin and they're not finding their way home very well because their homing instinct is affected, of course, when a wasp comes in to affect them, they're not going to have the strength to... successfully fight them
off. So they're much more vulnerable, and it's a cascading effect.
Absolutely. So not only did EPA not consider any other species, and, you know, in coming out with this revelation that this is affecting bees, they also relied very heavily on industry science, despite the abundance of peer-reviewed independent science. And so they, you know, in talking about the different crops that affect bees that are treated with this pesticide, they used a very, very narrow analysis that was deeply flawed, deeply flawed methodology. And so they weren't able to capture the full scope of the effects on our bees.
All right, so this is important. This is why you do what you do, because you understand. You know, a lot of people will take on face value, well, it's a good thing, you know, but because we don't understand fully what the implications are. So,
well, and it is a good thing that they're looking at the risks.
Yeah.
They actually need to give it a rigorous scientific analysis. They actually need to look at all the pollinators, and they need to do what the European Union has done, which is ban this pesticide, recognizing that it is absolutely inappropriate for use in our environment because it is so incredibly toxic to pollinators.
Right. So what would you suggest that people do other than not use the stuff, please? Number one, just don't use it. And I know that there are many, you know, on your website and ours, there are many alternatives to some of this nasty, gnarly stuff. Mm-hmm. But what else can people do to help educate themselves and maybe take some action?
One really important thing that folks can do is when you go to the nursery to buy plants, make sure that those nursery plants have not been treated with neonicotinoids.
Oh, yeah.
We've had a very large and successful campaign with our coalition partners targeting Lowe's, Home Depot, and a number of other large retailers. So we're working hard at it, and phase-outs are happening, but, you know, it's still very much worth asking when you go to buy a nursery plant, because the last thing you want to do is be buying plants that specifically attract pollinators for, you know, and then
right.
will end up killing them. So that's a really important step you can take. We'll also be sending out an action alert towards the end of the comment period, which is in about 45 days. So maybe in 5 weeks from now, we'll be sending out an action alert asking people to ask EPA to give this stuff a much more rigorous analysis.
Oh, good.
Take it off the market.
So if you haven't signed up yet, you can go to biologicaldiversity.org?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that you can sign up for their newsletter and alerts and whatever you need to do to stay on top of some of this stuff. And it never hurts to walk into your nursery. And the more people that demand plants that are not treated with these pesticides and neonicotinoids or whatever, I'm probably saying it wrong, whatever, you know, the more of us that speak up, the more demand there is for clean and healthy, non-toxic treatment.
Absolutely. You know, here in Portland, Oregon, we got the city to ban neonicotinoids for city use earlier this year.
Yeah, it's huge.
Last year, it's now 2016, so in 2015, we got that to happen. And it was very funny because we had a nursery owners association get up there and say, all nurseries will go out of business and we can't survive without this stuff. And but this person, you know, was sort of just a mouthpiece, and the very next person to testify said, I am a nursery owner. I recognize pollinators are absolutely essential to the living world, and I would never in a million years use these pesticides in my nursery. So let's get together and support those kinds of nursery owners.
Yeah, and everybody clapped and cheered.
It was a wonderful moment.
Yeah. I love it. Well, Lori-Ann, thank you for being on the front lines and helping us understand what's happening and what the implications are. And, you know, helping us become more educated so we can take action and make sure that we're doing our best for our wildlife. Thank you so much, Lori-Ann.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more. So I'm very excited today. First of all, I'm in a guest studio, the studio of The Many Shades of Green here in Manhattan with producer Abba Carmichael, which, by the way, my car on the way in called you Abba Chimichael or something ridiculous. It cracked me up. I meant to tell you that. So anyway, I'm here with and Max, I didn't ask, and I usually do, mm-hmm. how you like to be introduced.
I answer to a lot of different things because my first name is Maxine. My last name, maiden name is Margot.
Yeah.
So I used to get Margot in school
right,
all the time.
Called you Margot.
So when people call me Margot, it's like, you know, I'm used to that as well. So, and Max, I've been called all my
life.
So
that's okay. So, yeah, because that was my inclination Max, to just call you Max. But you are the host of the fabulous The Many Shades of Green, which is on our, it's featured on our radio network.
Proud to be.
Every day at noon, by the way, on GDGD Radio, GDGDRadio.com. Yay.
Yep. Yippee.
And you and I have had some fun working out there together a little bit already, and I'm excited to be here talking to you today. We're exchanging interviews, but, you know, I think we're kind of deepening that relationship so that we can go out and have more fun. You guys turned me on to this setup so I can go out and play.
Right.
With some remote equipment. So I'm like, yay, now I can be more annoying out in public.
Hey, I'm annoying too, so welcome to our worlds.
Yeah. So I know you have the signature question, which I was asked, and I semi-tried to rehearse it, and I thought, I can't. Green is just not my color, honest to God. I mean, people are like, but you're a green diva. And I'm like, yeah, but green is just not a good color on me. I look really washed out. So hey, it's vanity. So let me just throw that at you right off the bat. What color shade, what shade of green do you ascribe to yourself?
I like clover and Ooh. Green clover, which is beautiful. You can absolutely grow it instead of grass.
Yeah.
It doesn't need as much watering.
I think it's bee friendly too.
It's bee friendly. It's a beautiful color, and you think of leprechauns, but you're happy. so I like clover, and it's I read somewhere that it's one of the hot colors of the fall.
Oh.
Strangely enough,
and do they still do that? Are there really hot special colors of the fall? I thought everything goes now.
Everything goes, and they throw colors out. And this year, for some reason, I read in some article
clover green
is the color of. You know, that they're putting out on all the fall.
Oh, it's your year, honey.
So I got to go buy some clover green jeans. I'll be Mrs. Green Jean instead
Green
of Mr. Green Jean. I guess I'm dating myself on that one. Mr. Green Jeans. yeah. So that's pretty much it. I mean, in terms of any other green, you know, sea green, I grew up near the beach, you know, in Brooklyn. So any shade of that makes me, you know, happy, and anything revolving around water on the shore and listening to, you know, that beautiful sound makes me happy.
So the whole concept, which I love, and it's part of our tagline, in fact, that, you know, trying to get to a deeper shade of green, but that there are many, many shades of green make up the world of green.
Right.
So you do a lot of interesting stuff because of your remote equipment.
Mm-hmm.
I hear you get out there to Clearwater Festival, and you go to, you know, things in New York. And I'm hoping to recruit you to go out to some of these events in New York for us, because
sure.
I don't get out as much. But I'm thinking you asked me a similar question, and I'm right there with you. What's trending for you with The Many Shades of Green? What's a topic that has been kind of on your radar on the
Well, we do a lot of different things, but I'm a big proponent of renewable energy, and we have guests that talk about it, you know, getting the electric car out there more so people are aware of what, you know, how it works, and potentially to get cars like that and to get more of them on the road,
mm-hmm.
and get rid of all the gas guzzling things that are on the road right now. And so anything that's going to, you know, I'm working, I'm also on the Sustainability Advisory Board in my town up in Westchester.
Right.
And we are doing a solarize initiative. We're trying to get people in our town to get more solar. And if we get X amount of people, it's cheaper.
Right.
Now, I live in an area where there's a lot of woods. And then you need a good southern exposure. So, but there's enough, I think, to at least start to get that out. And to the sun is free. It's, I mean, today it's not there, but it's the sun is free. And people need to know that renewables are something that we need to start really getting more involved with and doing more. And so I think that's one topic that I think is very important.
Yes.
And we like to just get the word in on that. There's so many issues. There's, you know, water issues and food issues. And how do we keep the populace fed? How do we keep the population down?
Yeah.
What
that's,
do we...
That's flying under the radar, that topic. And I think it's an important one.
Right. I mean, people, you know, they think that they can keep having, you know, kids, but in fact, you know, they should be consciously thinking to reduce that. And even though the areas in Europe where they're not having as many children, and but still the other areas of the world are kind of like bouncing that off. I mean, India is going to be more populous than China will be in the next like 5 to 10 years. So we're talking billions of people. How do you keep those people healthy?
It's a sensitive topic because it's such a personal issue for people. But
right.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's an important one.
What do you do? I mean, how do we get everyone, you know, fed? And then there's issues of our food. What's in it? You know, these GMOs, Monsanto, chemicals that are killing us, that are killing the bees. I mean, it just goes on and on. Yet when you look outside, this beautiful fall we're having here in the Northeast, at least in New York, in my area, and I'm looking at the beautiful trees and the colors, and it's magnificent. And Mother Nature is treating us, yet we're tricking her. And I think she's kind of pissed off at this point, you know. So so there's so much out there that we need to do, and what can we do ourselves personally? I mean, what can we tell our audience what to do every day to keep them in check a little? I mean, even the low-hanging fruit, you know, that people need to do.
Okay, so I have a question for you. The interviewing the interviewer.
Right.
So if you could interview, in your capacity as the host of The Many Shades of Green, if you could interview anybody, who would you interview?
Access
to anybody.
I would like to interview Elon Musk.
Yeah, right?
He is doing things that are just blowing my mind.
We've tried unsuccessfully so far.
I would just love to. My son's name is Elon, and that his, you know, God man is Elon Musk, and he's doing things like under the radar and over the radar that are remarkable. I mean, he's keeping the space program alive. He's built this amazing vehicle, the Tesla, which is just a wonderful operating
vehicle.
Doing
a lot for battery technology.
And he's building, you know, this huge plant out in Nevada to for battery storage. I mean, people will debate the need for it. I don't see how they can debate the need for it. I think
that's the sort of hurdle we have to get across in order to make some
right.
Of this
I
electric.
Mean, apparently there's other ways to work the grid. We've just had, you know, someone on the show who's going to talk about that, and we'll hear about that. You know, people can tune in, but you know, and also you get differing, you know, reports, and you don't know what is accurate and what is not. Like, what do you believe that's in the print? What do you believe? I mean, who do you believe? What organizations do you believe? I certainly believe in Congress. How about you? I mean, when someone goes there and throws a snowball and says there's no climate, you know, there's no global warming, and he throws a snowball on the Senate floor.
It's depressing.
It's Inhofe, and he's the head of the Environmental Committee.
Yeah.
Then trouble. There's trouble.
Yeah.
I mean,
Confidence in our government probably isn't a thing.
Yeah, well, we're coming up new elections, and, you know, what do we do?
Yeah, I'm already overwhelmed, and I, you know, let's not go there. Yeah,
okay.
So the next question then, having to also do with your capacity as host of The Many Shades of Green, is what is your most fascinating interview you've done so far?
my most fascinating interview? That's a really good question. There's been a lot of really terrific people. I mean, I've had some favorites. Most interesting was doing an interview in a treehouse, in an actual treehouse.
Wow.
With J.K. Canepa, I think that's the last name, and she's one of the people fighting to have the liquid natural gas ports closed, the Ambrosia plant, the Spectra pipelines, and when we couldn't, there was an actual jackhammer out the window of the place we were doing it, and there was not a chance in hell we were going to do that.
Aww.
And she goes, "Come with me. I have a quiet place." And she takes me to this beautiful community garden on the east, on East 6th Street and Avenue B or something. It is just gorgeous. And she goes, "There." And she points to this giant willow tree that has built in like a treehouse.
Yeah.
And she goes, "We'll have it here." And I'm like, "This is amazing." It's
like, do you have pictures
it's
of
just
that?
Like, yeah, we have some pictures of it. And to me, in terms of fascinating and yeah. where the locale was,
yeah.
I mean, you know, doing it and seeing squirrels come up, and we saw a bunny rabbit.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and this is in the middle of the city, the
yeah.
urban jungle where this beautiful garden was. And to me, in terms of that locale, it was pretty
yeah.
amazing. But
yeah.
I've had really great guests. You know, we had Eva Radke from Film Biz, you know, Alan Weissman, author, you know, Countdown. We had a lot of really terrific authors. We just had Brute Force, a.k.a. or Steve Freeland, a.k.a. Brute Force, who did a thing called Planet Works, but he also did a very cult-directed song called The King of Fa on the Beatles' Apple record. We had one of the band members of Maroon 5. We've had some really, but the people, the down-to-earth workaday people
yeah.
who are, they just do so much, and people don't know how much is out there that's being done for the good. And these people are making a difference every single day.
Yeah.
And that's what we need to get out. We need to get out. Things do work. We don't really, you know, see how things work, but things are working and things are problematic, but hopefully we can solve them by these terrific people doing wonderful stuff. And that's what we, you know, promote on the show.
I love it. And yes, I mean, it's fun having celebrities and all that, but and they help bring audience in.
Right.
But it really is the people on the front lines. Like when we were at that UN thing and we mm-hmm. spoke to some of those women who were like amazing.
Like Solar Sisters. And
yeah, and literally and on the front lines.
Yeah.
So we got to wrap up, which is kind of sad. Tell us how people can find out more and listen to podcasts of The Many Shades of Green.
You can go to the manyshadesofgreen.com. Our shows are always up there. Of course, the Green Divas Network, bboxradio.com. And we're also in Glimmerglass Radio,
which
is upstate New York,
yeah.
near Cooperstown. And hoping by the time this airs that the Mets would have won the World Series. And you can also tweet us at TM Shades of Green. And we have Glacier Dash Entertainment, which is a production company, and Instagram, right? We've got it. And we have the amazing, the people I work with are awesome. I couldn't do anything without Abba Carmichael and Brian Horowitz and all the interns throughout the years. I couldn't.
Right.
And a true green diva is Miss Abba right now.
I know.
And I have
Yay.
A green, and Brian is the green dude. So,
I have to meet Brian. I haven't met Brian yet.
Yeah. He's quite a character. We love him. So.
All right. Well, I'm, you know, I've got my eyes set on you people. Doing some more work with all of you because I admire what you're doing. And there you have it. Thank you.
And thank you for what you're doing. And I hope to be working with you quite a lot.
Oh, you will.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action, And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THEGreenDivas.com.